Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
The wise men will bow down before the throne, and at his feet they'll cast their golden crowns. When the man comes around, whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down.
Recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is
Abe. What's up?
Out Now is a film podcast. As Abe and I discussing new movies weekly, we also bring a discussion about the latest movie trailers, box office results and predictions, a callback to past films similar to the main film of the week, games, and other fun stuff. This is episode 83, and this week we are talking Killing Them Softly, the new film starring Brad Pitt, Richard Jenkins, James Gandolfini, Ray Liotta, a bunch of people. Joining us, we have writer for Mendelsohn's Memos and Huffington Post, currently seeking compensation in the most mob-appropriate way possible, Scott Mendelsohn.
How you doing? Good evening.
And we have writer for Ropes of Silicon and co-host of the podcast, Brad and Laramie on Movies, currently crushing it when it comes to mob-protected poker games. Laramie Legal.
I'm all in.
Nice.
Nice.
How are you guys doing?
I'm doing well.
No complaints.
All right. Good to know. Let's get to a few announcements. I think we have an email before we get to it.
I have a couple emails.
We? Do you have one in front of you? Because I'm looking at mine.
Are you looking at yours?
I'm trying to find mine. It's been... We got one from Mike Blakemore. I'll just read this one. Hey guys, episode 82 started off as the best episode in a long time, except I'm listening and waiting for Aaron's guest musical talents to shine and play the theme, meaning it was time for games, but wait, no games, just rambling about Spielberg, blah, blah, blah. Please bring games back, and Abe, also. Loyal listener, Meg Blakemore. People like games, apparently. I was not aware of this. I figured it was, you know, wasting time with games, but people like them.
We've got to get that Twitter game back. That's a great game.
That's a lot of prep, but I could do that game. Okay. Do you have another email, Abe?
There is one from Dion Thompson, but I don't know if that's really anything.
Oh, this one's about Twilight. This one... I'll summarize this one because this is a long email. This one basically is about our... We did a step-up commentary a while back, which was podcast history, I believe, because we watched all three Step Up movies concurrently and recorded a joint commentary, so you can watch any Step Up movie and listen to that commentary and be set. So, Dion Thompson wants us to do one for the Twilight movies. I don't think I could go that far.
I'll do it.
Yeah, Scott, would you? Okay. See, now
I've seen all five.
Yeah.
We'd have to consider. We'll consider.
How would you get five TVs?
Well, what we did was we had five different guests going on. From her first step up, we had three different guests in different locations. So we were watching them concurrently. So I was watching Step Up 3. Alan was watching the first Step Up, and Jordan was watching the second Step Up. And we're watching them in separate locations, but recording together at the same time because they're all roughly the same amount of time. So I consider that podcast history. I don't think anyone else has attempted something of that scope before. So.
That's madness.
It's a bold, ambitious move.
I thought it was.
But so. We'd have to wait till the fifth Twilight came out on DVD, because there actually is quite a bit to say about that one.
Yeah. Would you consider yourself a fan of that movie?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I probably it's the best one since the original. And it's I mentioned this here and there. I went to see it at a Thursday night 10 o'clock screening, and it was one of the more enjoyable movie-going experiences I've had in a long, long time. The fans were going nuts. They were laughing and applauding on every cue. And, you know, without going into spoilery details, there's something kind of shocking that happens right toward the end, and the audience just went absolutely nuts, and it was great. It was a very enjoyable, you know, when you think of going to the movies. And I realized that it's no secret I have kids. You know, I haven't done that kind of screening in a long time for that kind of movie.
Well,
And it was just a really a lot of fun.
Laramie, were you a fan of the final Twilight movie?
Yeah, I thought it was... I would have it as the second best of the series. I'm one of the few weird people who like New Moon. But I didn't like the other three at all. So, yeah, I would say this was a very solid C+ for me.
Yeah, I've tricked our listeners into getting a Twilight review in this show so in some capacity, so I'm happy for that. Let's move on. Let's get, of course, iTunes reviews and ratings. Always good to get those. Helps out the show. It's really easy to do. Log on to iTunes, star rating, what have you. It's cool. Okay, let's get to know everybody. Each week we ask each other a few questions to kind of set the tone for the podcast. I better get to know everybody, and I'll start this one off. Laramie, when do you love to see slow motion in movies?
Death scenes. Exclusively death scenes.
Exclusively.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now I got to think of some more. Maybe when doves fly as well. I like when doves are in
John Woo style.
Yeah, I do enjoy that. Or if the last shot's about to go up. I like it to be in slow-mo, like a three-pointer at the buzzer. I think that's a good use of slow-mo.
So also,
nice, yeah. Sports movies.
Sports movies.
Indeed. I will go, if I've sufficiently answered your question, I'm actually going to bring in Scott.
Yes.
Scott, what is your favorite Brad Pitt movie?
God, I was actually thinking about that just in case somebody asked me. Let me think. I actually have Box Office Mojo open and I can...
There's no wrong answer except for Benjamin Button.
Meet Joe Black is okay.
Cool World.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
That movie was great when I was 12. I would have to say, perhaps by default, Interview with the Vampire.
Cool.
No, 12 Monkeys. 12 Monkeys.
As in, are you thinking Brad Pitt performance or Brad Pitt movie?
God, he had a heck of a run right at the beginning, didn't he? 7. That's one of my favorite thrillers. It's my favorite Morgan Freeman performance, and Brad Pitt's terrific in it. And it's one of the best films of the 90s, in my opinion. But I would say the same thing about 12 Monkeys. So, coin toss, 7, 12 Monkeys.
Fair. Okay. Totally fair.
Yeah.
It's not Cool World, but all right.
Well, I was going to say California.
That's not bad.
It's actually a pretty decent movie, but...
Yeah, not bad.
You know, I'm sorry. Come back to me. I have absolutely nothing. I have nothing.
All right, Abe, go. All
right. Aaron.
Yeah.
All right. If James Gandolfini was a washed-up mob hitman, would you hire him still? And you knew that he was washed up.
I mean, if he needed the money, he's James Gandolfini. Like, okay, so if you said John Goodman, maybe, because he seems
John Goodman.
He's such a bear. It's like a big nice guy. Like he can be threatening, sure, but he's John Goodman. James Gandolfini, you know, you don't really get the sense that he's nice all the time like you do like with John Goodman.
That's true. He was very much that waiter. And I bring this up later because we'll talk about this later. But man, I wanted to just, like, you know, put a nice pillow over his face while he was sleeping.
Graphic. All right. So I'm probably going to say, if it was, like, The Mexican with James Gandolfini, where he's, like, a gay hitman in that movie, yeah, maybe. He's not washed up. He seems like he's trying to stay fit. He's trying to find love and everything. This one, not as much.
Yeah.
Scott.
Yes.
What's a role you really want to see Richard Jenkins in?
Any role. That's cheating, but I am a fan. Just for fun, I'd love to see him in a James Bond film. Why not have him play a James Bond villain?
As a villain?
Yeah, as a villain. Or a Bond girl, one of the two.
Bond girl.
Of course, yeah.
Okay, I have a vaguely... Okay, I think I have a question. Laramie, is that your name?
Yep.
Okay, in honor of Meet Joe Black... give me your vote offhand for the most unintentionally funny death scene in a movie.
Most unintentionally funny death scene in a movie. Does the horse die in Warhorse? No. Okay.
No.
I'm not going to go for that. Let's go with not Haji in the Richard Gere film. That won't work. That wasn't funny at all. I find death so serious. That's my problem. Let me think here. So you're claiming that Joe Black's death in Meet Joe Black was unintentionally funny then? That would be your premise. Okay, that's a totally fair premise. How about maybe Loki and the Avengers?
Fair enough.
Yeah. I just thought his whole character was sort of unintentional comedy. Or maybe it was intentional. I don't know. Hard to tell. I will go to Aaron.
Yep.
Aaron, if you have to kill a guy, but they ask you to beat him up first, what do you do morally?
Morally, what do I do? Has to beat him up.
I guess it's an ethical question more than a moral question.
I just watched Election the other night, and that's the other, that, you know, they're the whole question about what ethics and versus morals is. But I feel like there's a scenario here. Like, am I in front of him? Do I have to show proof of beating up somebody before I kill him?
You gotta take a photo and paste it on Facebook. Right?
It depends what he did, right? But no, if I know I'm going to kill him anyway, like, I'd probably just take him out, like, and not beat him up. Like, I'd be merciful about the situation, just, you know, end it.
I'm doing, like, a Pulp Fiction, take him out with, like, a gun to my head.
Yeah, no, I'd you know, take...
You're kind of a compassionate hitman.
I'd say so. I feel... Yeah. I'd kill them softly, I suppose. I'm out of questions. Abe, you got another?
Yeah, I got another one. All right, let's go with Laramie. All right, Laramie. Now, Richard Jenkins, do you think that he could be a huge crime syndicate in any film? Like the boss? Or is he kind of more of like a mid-level lawyer kind of counsel dude?
I do think Richard Jenkins does his best work supporting, weirdly. Like, he made Eat, Pray, Love almost tolerable at parts. He made the one with Owen Wilson, the comedy, Hall Pass, almost tolerable at parts. So he's very good in those 15-20-minute bursts. So I think he's supporting crime syndicate leader. That's his wheelhouse.
Okay. So he's not the top dog.
Right. He shouldn't be number one. He should be number four, I would say.
That's fair enough.
Pass relaying messages and such.
As we'll talk about later, too.
Can I go to Abe now?
Sure.
And then allowed to go back? Out. Like, are you allowed to redirect? Is that okay?
There's I allow tag backs and know everybody.
Okay.
And there's no playground rules here.
Yeah.
In your mind, is there an actor who uses breath better than James Gandolfini?
You know, I will say...
Like audible breath?
He's a breathy actor, right?
He is, yeah.
Well, you know, there's two examples that come to my mind very quickly. First one is Jeff Goldblum.
Yes.
And, of course, the second one is everyone's favorite, Marlon Brando, toward the later half of his career when he was just extremely overweight. So
I feel like Dom DeLuise is probably a good breathy actor as well, but James Gandolfini, I think we can recognize as like the breathiest of actors. Although, yeah, Marlon Brando is a good call.
Toward the end there, yeah, where he's just like, I can't even say my lines anymore.
Underrated as a breathy actor, I would say, is Mark Wahlberg, because he always seems like he's out of breath when he's talking to you.
He's just always out of breath.
Yeah, he's like he was doing laps before he got to his scenes. Like, he's like, I'm just trying to find my teddy bear. Like, it's just...
I don't know if it counts as breathy, but Forrest Whitaker always seems like he's about to cry.
Oh man, we should have brought you on to the commentary.
Okay. All right, so we're all set. I think we're good here. I think we've sufficiently done know everybody for the week. So yeah, that's how we do that. Let's do a little. I don't even have any, but let's do some out now quickies. TM.
TM.
Yeah, this is where a lot of movies come out every week, and we don't always review every single one of them. So just passing it up. I haven't actually seen anything else this week that I haven't talked about already. Abe, have you?
No, but I did watch Bob Burger's Thanksgiving episode, and there's a great reference to a Hayao Miyazaki film, which I found very pleasant.
Which Hayao Miyazaki film?
I would give it away. If I
don't. Okay, never mind. Scott, I know you saw Zero Dark Thirty. I don't want you to talk about that yet because I want to save that for when we actually review that movie whenever we do that. But Any other movies you might have seen?
Well, I know you guys have probably talked about it already, but I finally got around to watching The Bay on, I think, Thursday night.
We haven't talked about The Bay, actually.
Oh, the reviews were decent, whatever. Probably the scariest film I've seen since The Mist.
Really?
It genuinely disturbing. Genuinely terrifying. It's my wife who, always says, oh, this is the last found footage movie I'm ever going to watch, blah, blah, blah. Even she loved it. It's a terrifyingly plausible bit of it's a Barry Levinson film. It's basically about a small town that's infected with some kind of ecological disaster, and right. It's just really, really, really scary.
Huh. Huh. Scariest Levinson film since Diner or Sphere?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, Wag the Dog is pretty terrifying in its implications.
All right. So it's definitely worth a watch.
Yes, very much so.
I'm gonna check that one out then. Yeah. Laramie, any?
I've been mostly catching up on documentaries I missed, but I watched Wreck-It Ralph again last night for the second time. I love that again. I think it's just, especially once they get to Sugar Rush, it's a very interesting film. And then two documentaries I'll throw out. Samsara would be best to see on the big screen if you can.
I wanted to,
because
I missed it.
On a small screen, it's not going to be as effective having no vocals at all and being completely visual as a film. And then Searching for Sugar Man, still the best documentary I've seen this year. Really, really love it. And if you like music, I think you'll really dig this one as well.
I really dug Searching.
Yeah, Aaron saw that, and it was a high recommendation from friend of the show, Mark Hoban.
Yeah, very, very good movie.
Cool.
All right, let's move on to movie trailer talk, where we discuss some of the newest movie trailers. And, the first one we're going to talk about is Jack the Giant Slayer. This is the new film from Bryan Singer, and it stars About a Boy's Nicholas Holt as Jack, who ventures up a beanstalk with a number of other people, including, I believe, Ewan McGregor as the kind of lead in this army.
Looking very dashing.
Very, very, very dashing Ewan McGregor. They're going to go slay some giants and rescue princesses or whatever. I mean, it's that kind of movie. With that said, Scott Mendelson, what do you think of the Jack the Giant Slayer trailer?
To my shock, I was actually entertained by the trailer. On paper, this looks like yet another, they're trying to rip off Alice in Wonderland. You know, it's written, it's a reconfigured fairy tale, blah, 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 blah. And it may be. And I wasn't particularly into any of the particularly special effects sequences or the action sequences, but it looks like it may have quirky characters. Stanley Tucci made me giggle. Ewan McGregor, of course, his hair and his beard is perhaps the film's most special effect. And Bill Nye is always a kick. And I don't think it's, an even comparison, but I got a certain Pirates of the Caribbean vibe in that, yes, they're telling an oft-told tale, but we've got good actors that we're letting have fun here. Something that you did not get in, say, Prince of Persia.
Fair enough.
Will the film be good? I don't know. The fact that Bryan Singer immediately signed on to do another X-Men movie seems to me that he knew this was going to be a flop and needed a safe project to run back to.
Could it be fair to say that, the movie was, finished a while ago. They just moved it back a fair ways.
Yeah.
It's not like he had his schedule was a little less. I mean,
Well, no, but the fact that, they moved it back and forth, they changed the title, et cetera, et cetera. These generally would be, danger signs. And, who's to say? But I will say, just judging from the trailer, watching it in a vacuum, it looks more entertaining than I was expecting. Yeah. And one thing I liked about the film, or the trailer, is that Eleanor Tomlinson walks the fine line between being a female lead that, isn't just a random piece of paper to be ogled and not, basically uttering every line in the be more feisty vein. Again, I think of Prince of Persia as a negative example of this.
Yep.
Judging from the trailer, it looks like it will be fun. And I was not expecting that.
All right. Laramie.
Yeah, maybe it's because I don't watch trailers anymore that I did kind of like this trailer. I like the scope they're using. I like that they're adding a bunch of characters. I like that it did indicate a quirkiness to it. That said, these are the ways you make a trailer these days. You show an action beat, you show a comedy beat, you show a character helping another character up. So I definitely think if you had to predict whether it's going to be good or bad, you'd still predict bad based on the calendar movement of it. But right. The trailer itself was, yeah, fairly good. Good cut trailer.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. This newly released trailer, it was pretty fun. It looks like they maybe, I don't know if they did anything different to the film in terms of having to reshoot whatever or just maybe editing it differently because, like what Laramie had mentioned, they've delayed it till the spring of 2013. I think it was originally supposed to be released this past summer.
Summer, yeah.
Yeah. So other than some of the CG in the clouds where all the giants look very, you know, computer-generated, yeah, it looks to be rather fun. I hope that it is.
Yeah, I can basically just echo these sentiments. It looks entertaining. Whether or not it is, we'll see. It got moved, but maybe that's a good thing, maybe that's a bad thing. Well, I don't know. So, Jack the Giant Slayer comes out, what, March 1st, 2013. So it's got that mark. Is that like, did Alice in Wonderland come out like at that same time?
Yeah, and 300.
No. And 300, yeah, like that's...
Yeah. March.
I think the Alice in Wonderland date's actually taken by, ironically enough, Disney's Oz the Great and Powerful.
Yeah.
Which I don't think looks very good at all.
It seems very similar, right?
I seem to be the minority. Everyone else, that's doing nothing for me whatsoever, but whatever.
Seems very similar in terms of movies coming out in March. It's like we're nailing our fantasy quota. All right. The next movie we're going to talk about, we have Now You See Me, which is a magician heist thriller, words I don't get to put together enough, involving Jesse Eisenberg, Morgan Freeman, who else? Woody Harrelson, and
Dave Franco.
Dave Franco, and I think Shoshana, Melanie Laurent, as like a team of illusionists that pull off heists, and like Mark Ruffalo's the FBI agent trying to track him. Michael Caine's like Lost from The Prestige trying to involve himself in this in some way. Directed by Lou Leterrier of the Transporter movies, among other things, and Clash of the Titans, I guess, which would be very kind of similar to the Jack and the Giant Slayer movie with Nicholas Holt, actually. But anyway, I'll start with Laramie. Laramie, what did you think of this trailer?
The trailer, again, looked pretty good. The only two warning signs are Louis Leterrier at this point off of Clash, which was kind of a monstrosity. And Jesse Eisenberg was almost playing Facebook dude again, Mark Zuckerberg. Like, he had that same kind of intonation, so I'd like to see him do something that stretches him a little. But if you look at this cast, it looks pretty amazing. I guess, one weird thing with movies in general is they are a magic trick. You know, you can't possibly show the audience everything, and so there's some trick involved. And so whenever you make movies about magic, it does feel like a cheat unless you overtly show what's going on. So I'm hoping that it's a good film and that it's a smart film, but I'm worried that it's not, I guess.
Scott?
I think it looks like a lot of fun. This has actually been pretty high on my must-see list, you know, just because it had a great premise. I mean, what a wonderful idea. You have, you know, stage magicians that are secretly criminals. And, of course, the cast is terrific, although it does answer the question that if Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine are in the same movie, who narrates the trailer? I still think they should have cut two different versions, with one with Morgan Freeman narrating and one with Michael Caine narrating.
And then a third one with Kevin Costner narrating, right?
Exactly.
And it's still style.
Yeah. But no, it's got a wonderful cast. I mean, you know, Elias, if I'm pronouncing this right, Elias Kotis is in it. And that's always a good thing.
Casey Jones.
Yes. And the trailer itself was cut together. It felt a little rushed. But that might have just been, I've only seen it once. I actually saw it the night I saw Twilight, and that was nice, because in this day and age, it's very rare for me to see a trailer first in a theater that I was not expecting to see. But it still looks like a lot of fun. As far as Louis Leterrier, is that it right?
Louis Leterrier.
Yeah. This is, you know, I'm hoping this is his first American film that he'll be able to make without massive studio interference. Because Universal kind of screwed him over in The Incredible Hulk. And from what I've read, Warner Brothers kind of screwed him over in Clash of the Titans, too. I've read a few bits and pieces. That film was massively reshot and re-edited, you know, after the fact. So I don't know how much blame he can take for how Clash of the Titans turned out. You know, this seems to be him getting a certain amount of
creative
control. So let's see what he does with it. you know, it's a genuinely original idea, and that's always nice in this day and age. It looks good. I hope it is good. I'll be there as soon as they let me see it.
Yeah. I'll jump in. The I like the idea. I like the premise. I really like this cast. Something about Eisenberg bugs me. I don't know why. I like Jesse Eisenberg. I love The Social Network, and I like him in certain movies. But something about him, like, being, like, confident lead hero person kind of throws me off in, like, a when it comes to summer action blockbuster type things. And, I mean, I don't think this is, like, a huge – I mean, it's about magicians pulling off heists as opposed to him being, like, a guy with a gun running around on the streets or something. But, like, that's something that it feels like – almost like how we're saying Richard Jenkins is, you know, fourth in command. It feels like Jesse Eisenberg was more suited to kind of being next to the main guy in charge, but I don't know. But this trailer, while I had fun watching aspects of it, something bugged me about Eisenberg being kind of the head guy in this. I don't know.
It didn't bother me.
So I look forward to seeing the movie, just because I'm curious if that holds up, or maybe I'll be convinced, maybe I'll be like, oh, Eisenberg does hold this off. I just whisper that to myself quietly in the theater while I'm watching it. Well, Eisenberg's pulling this one off. Abe, what are your thoughts?
It looks pretty slick, and I definitely wasn't sure if they were like aliens from like another planet kind of thing with real magical powers, because the interrogation room scene looked pretty cool. But it also gave me a vibe of Jumper, because Jumper, they wear like all dark clothing and they all go rob banks and stuff. So I was like, man, I wonder if it's going to be really cool or just really ridiculously dumb. I do agree with the director. He's kind of on my iffy list, you know, in terms of being able to direct something that is stylish and has context and substance rather than just flash. So
Unleashed a lot.
Unleashed, yes. With Jet Li?
Yeah, with Jet Li.
And Morgan Freeman, too.
Morgan Freeman.
So, yeah. But the host of characters and actors in this is so phenomenal, actually. So I hope that it's not just like, you know, I'm sure that it has some good in it. So I am more positive on it than I would be if it was just like Jesse Eisenberg and a bunch of nobodies.
Yeah. And, you know, for what it's worth, there actually is a decent chunk of substance in the deleted scenes of The Incredible Hulk that, you know, Universal more or less forced them to cut because they were afraid of having an overly long character-driven, you know, Hulk film like the last one. And I would if they actually put that version out on Blu-ray, I would buy it in a heartbeat. But I doubt they'll ever do it, especially now that it's basically been retconned out of existence.
It just has Mark Ruffalo's head on the
exactly
on his body. All right. Okay. So Now You See Me opens June 7th, 2013. Oh, I got a while on that one. That's a summer movie.
It got moved. It was supposed to open in I think April.
Oh, they probably figured that Jack the Giant Slayer was going to be killing at the box office still, so they didn't want to have an Avengers battleship situation occur again, right? That was the reason that movie wasn't good. All right, moving on. Let's get to our main film review for Killing Them Softly.
One of them starts bragging about how he just knocked over this guy's game for $100K. I don't know what it is with these guys. They can't keep their mouth shut about nothing.
It goes up like a bonfire. I love it.
So who's gonna do it, you?
I need Mickey for that one.
New York Mickey?
So what, you want me to do a double?
I can handle it.
I don't know if they'll spring for two guys.
It's a two-man job.
I come in here every day.
I know.
Look, I don't know you.
If you guys know me. You're in a position very few guys ever get in. You have choices.
Look, I don't know if I can do this.
You made a mistake. And you gotta make things right.
There's a man going around taking names. And he decides who to free and who to blame.
You ever killed anyone?
They cry, they plead, they call for their mothers. And the man comes around. I like to kill him softly from a distance.
So that should have been some of the trailer for Killing Them Softly. This is the new film starring Brad Pitt as a mob enforcer who's looking into what happened with a mob poker game that was basically stuck up by a group of kind of dim-witted thieves who get the job done, but now someone has to pay, basically, and Brad Pitt's going to kind of figure things out. He brings in a friend of his, played by James Gandolfini, to also help in possibly whacking certain individuals. Richard Jenkins is a kind of a middleman working with Brad Pitt to figure out who needs to pay in the situation, and Ray Liotta is the the guy who puts the whole poker game on, and he's done some shady things in the past with his own poker game, so now maybe the blame needs to be placed on him a little bit too. Okay, with all that said, I'll start with Laramie. Laramie, what did you think of Killing Them Softly?
I really, really liked Killing Them Softly. F cinema score notwithstanding. I've wrestled with this the last couple days. When you see as many movies as we do you just like something different? Whereas if you see one movie a month, you just want something the same. That's kind of comforting. Mm. I don't know if that's the disconnect there. But for me, Killing Them Softly, its main mistake, if I were to grade it in the A-minus region, would be that the subtext isn't subtexty enough. It's too upfront with the whole Obama slash capitalism as a predator aspect. So they are very on the nose with it throughout. I would have liked a couple of beats of that, but not the entire film weaving in images from politicians. As a just gangster film, I guess it's completely nihilistic, it seems like, and perhaps that speaks to what critics like as well. But I love Brad Pitt in general. I loved Gandolfini in this. I liked Leota quite a bit. I think the Scoot dude, I don't know his last name, but Scoot.
Scoot McNairy.
Yes.
Scoot McNairy was really good. I loved him in this. And I thought overall it was just a really solid drama that I would recommend to people and then I guess be wrong.
You know? Scott Edelson, what did you think of Killing Them Softly?
I agree. I thought it was a very good film. As far as, you know, yes, we see movies a lot, but it's just a good, solid crime drama. It's got full, you know, it's terrific actors, you know, playing terrific roles. What I found most interesting about it is just the sheer quality of the conversational dialogue. A lot of the movie is basically just talking, you know, two or three characters in a room having a conversation. And they're real conversations. They're not just talking about the plot. I would argue the best scene in the film is James Gandolfini's introductory scene where, without going into details, he and Brad Pitt sit at a restaurant and Gandolfini just pours his heart out, more or less. And it's for all the talk about the film being, you know, pessimistic and cynical, it's a very somber, sad picture that does have a certain sympathy for its characters, even the ones that are, you know, utterly doomed right from the start. And I think while there is a certain inevitability to the fates that certain characters will meet, it is, you know, it's empathetic about that. There is a certain sadness to it. I absolutely agree that the biggest problem I have with the film is that the subtext is text. You know, the film opens with, you know, talk of, you know, George W. Bush talking about the 2008 meltdown. Then you go to Ben Bernanke. And, of course, the punchline, well, you know, eventually you get up to, you know, Barack Obama talking about it. And, you know, one or two bits of that would have been enough for two reasons. A, right. It hits you over the head sledgehammer. It doesn't respect the intelligence of your audience to get it. And B, I frankly found it unlikely that these very low-level blue-collar mobsters would be watching C-SPAN in their neighborhood dive bars all the time.
The remote was broken.
Yeah, I mean, really? They're going to be
watching quality programming, Scott. Yeah. That's what they want.
And, you know, if I recall, it wasn't even like they were watching like Fox News with the, you know, the ticker tape and the, you know, they were watching. You know, the screen was filled up by the people speaking. And that's primarily what you only get on C-SPAN.
Right.
So not only were they watching politics on TV, they were watching C-SPAN. And I'm sorry, I don't hang out with a lot of blue-collar, working poor gangsters, but I'm pretty sure they watch sports.
I do, no. and they do.
So. Yeah, you'd be like, let's not generalize now, Scott. We do.
But, yeah, I think it's very well acted. Richard Jenkins is excellent. Scoot McNairy is fantastic, as is Ben Mendelsohn. It's just he plays a slightly less empathetic character. You know, he plays a character that's slightly less wise to his faults, hence we sympathize with him a little bit less. Richard Jenkins is wonderful as a character, arguably someone that thinks he's more important than he actually is. And I got a certain, you know, they're very different films, so bear with me. I got a certain Donnie Brasco vibe from it, in that it was a look at not the big mafia kingpins at the top, but the low-level people. The people that, frankly, when you look down to it, are the working poor of the underworld crime scene. And that's where a lot of the subtext was, the idea that criminal enterprises represent capitalism in its purest form because it takes morality out of the equation. And that's certainly a point very much worth making. I think it's worth arguing. But again, I think we get it after the first couple of times. And the repeated scenes of Bernanke, Bush, Obama, you know, whoever, you know, McCain.
If McCain, he's there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically him, you know, it's basically director, you know, Andrew Dominic, whatever his name
Dominic,
is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, you know, jabbing you in the ribs with the ruler saying, get it, get it, get it, get it. We do get it. Visually, the picture has a nice, grimy, authentic quality to it. I wasn't as crazy about a certain slow motion scene that, you know, it's a major sequence in the picture, and it's a sequence of violence, and it's done so stylistically that it loses some of its impact. You know, most of the violence in the film is very, you know, brutal and realistic, and just, you know, you see violence being done.
Right.
But this particular scene, for whatever reason, was done very stylistically that I think lessens some of the impact of the picture.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get into that.
And, you know, as far as the cinema score rating, I'm frankly baffled by that. Not because I like the film better than other people did. I'm, you know, it's, I understand the F that something like The Box might get, which, you know, completely goes completely off the rails in its second act. You know, even somebody like me that, you know, went in wanting to like it, you know, kind of turned against it out to a point. But, and also, the, you know, Killing Them Softly did so little at the box office that I would have to imagine that most people that went theoretically knew what they were getting into. But that's obviously not the case.
Well, let's get the rest of us talk about what we thought of the movie. Let's say, hey, what do you think of Killing Them Softly?
You know, I thought it was a very well-made film. It's, everything looked great, everything sounded great, the acting was fantastic beyond belief. But again, yeah, the same problems that I had were what Scott and Laramie had too, which is just there's a lot of heavy-handedness of the subcontext, and it's just right there in your face. And I understood it. I got it. There's a great speech at the end that kind of sums everything up, and I felt that was fantastic. But all throughout, it's very strange that they would make you feel that way. But again, I think that the best things about it are just that the acting and the simple story, but all these folks that are going, that are also feeling the effects of the recession at the period, which it's not a present day film. It's like made like
2008.
Yeah. It's set 2008. So yeah, I definitely enjoyed all that stuff. And the thing that I liked most about it also was the dark humor in it. Particularly with conversations between Richard Jenkins and Brad Pitt, which I thought were very funny, and we'll get into some examples later, I'm sure. But overall, I'm generally positive on the film, although with the you know what the director is trying to say with it, I'm kind of put off by it. And about the cinema score rating, I mean, I was in a theater with maybe 12 people, and 2 people left before anything cool really happened. So I can understand that, but at the same time, yeah, you know what you're getting into if you see this film.
I mean, I guess, yeah, I guess it would reflect on how little this movie did this weekend that, yeah, I would imagine people knew the kind of movie they're going into watching. But at the same time, I do think the marketing kind of sells a movie that's somewhat different in the same way that, I guess, Drive kind of – which is a weird thing to argue because it arguably didn't sell a different thing than it was shown. It's just – I go Drive last year, it's showing you exactly what that movie is. People just expected more from it, I guess. And I feel like Killing Them Softly is doing the same kind of thing. Do you think that's fair?
Well, I think, you know, Drive and Killing Them Softly, they were truthful in advertising in that they showed you pretty much every major beat in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But they were false only in that you arguably thought that maybe the trailer was withholding something.
Or
that, there's more.
You're inferring
and there wasn't
that,
more.
You're inferring that there's more. Like this,
yeah. It's like, no, it's you, what you see is what you get. And I think in general, people aren't very good at reading trailers. I mean, even something I remember, all the people that were shocked that, you know, Observe and Report was a very dark film. It was like, if you watch the reason I wanted to see it was because of the trailer, which if you pay attention to the trailer, you realize you're not getting Paul Blart Mall Cop. But you know, it's there are films over history that have missold the film. I don't think this is one of them. I just think people thought, "Ooh, it's a Brad Pitt gangster movie." You know, that will be.
I'll disagree a little bit on that point, simply because I don't generally watch trailers. I think the only time I watch trailers are when Abe and Aaron order me to. other than that, but I think marketing guys have a much different view of the world, and they want the action beats front and center. And so if you have a trailer that's a minute long and it's 45 seconds of action, the human mind says this movie is action-packed. It just extrapolates that out. When in reality, they've put the only 45 seconds of action in the film in the trailer. So the marketing guys don't want to have truth in advertising. They want you in the seats week one. They could care less if you actually – I mean, ideally you'd like the film, but they're judged on week one box office. So a film like Drive, they're not going to sell, this is the quietest movie you've seen in the year. You know, they're just not going to do that. I mean, I think both Drive and Killing Them Softly suffer from that cognitive disconnect about expectations. And having not seen the trailer for either of them, maybe it helped me a little more really like both those films.
Which makes me curious as to why no one saw them anyway, unless like someone like spread a whole bunch of word of mouth about what the movie is. And like, you know, millions of people listened to that one guy and said, I'm not going to see that movie, I guess, this weekend. I mean,
Scott mentioned prior that 10 million is a hefty opening for the week after Thanksgiving, and
you're
just not going to hit a number this weekend. No.
Scott?
No, go ahead.
Okay, I'm just cutting with my own review. I did like it quite a bit. I liked it a lot, actually. We try not to let each other know what we thought of the movie just so we can have some kind of surprise. And I was kind of hoping Abe wouldn't like it just because we all, I think, have the same exact thoughts on the movie. I think it's very well acted. I think there's some very cool stylish things going on directorially. I like how the story plays. I like the straightforwardness of the story, actually. It's the kind of movie where I think you could easily, if this was a different movie, if it was more... I don't know, not necessarily creative, but if it was different, there could have been crazy twists and turns coming on and, like, differing up what's going on in the action. But instead, it's very – you kind of know how this plot's going to play out, and it doesn't do anything to kind of back away from that. Things are going to inevitably happen, and they do. But getting there was a lot of somber fun to an extent. There's a lot of dark humor in this movie that I like. There's a lot of performances that I like. There's a lot of different aspects that I liked about this movie as a whole. I do think – again, I agree with you guys that it kind of hits you over the head with the message or whatever of the movie, and it's not subtle about that at all. But it didn't necessarily hinder my enjoyment of the film. I'm just aware that that bit exists. I know the movie was like, what, 2.5 hours originally, so I'd be curious if...
Really?
Yeah, right. It was like 2.5 hours, like the first cut of this movie. So I'd be curious if like the whole knocking over the head with the message would be kind of diluted more in that full version, perhaps. But
It's a long cut.
It's interesting because it felt like a complete movie. I mean,
I'm curious.
I mean, it didn't feel like it was missing anything. Frankly,
I'm curious what else is there. Like, yeah.
Interesting. I agree with what you said in that. You know, in the vein of perhaps a Stephen King novel, it is tense and suspenseful because you know exactly what awful things are going to happen. And, you know, there's just no stopping this train, so to speak. And there's a lot of inherent drama in that. As far as, you know, getting back, if I may, for a moment about, you know, the marketing,
sure.
You know, I saw the trailer made me want to see the movie and I came away satisfied with what I saw. So, I mean... To be honest, I didn't see the trailer for Drive before I saw the film, and I didn't like Drive for a number of reasons that I'm still getting hate mail about a year later. it's interesting how different audiences read trailers. For me, I sort of look like, okay, there's a lot of action in this trailer, but it looks like it's all in the same couple scenes. There's probably not much action in this film.
I would say that the theatrical trailer for the film made me want to see it a lot. And that's the trailer that I think sells what the movie is the best. I keep seeing the TV ads for this movie, which are they make it feel like it's like the next Snatch with Brad Pitt talking not English this time or something. It gives you like this. It's a really cool movie in the wake of Tarantino or whatever. That's the kind of movie it's selling, and so that's kind of the one I'm more referring to, I guess, just because like. That original theatrical trailer I was seeing, you know, since the summer, because that movie was about, Killing Them Softly was going to come out in September. But then you get to these, like, TV ads that I'm seeing now, and, like, the blitzkrieg marketing that it did in the past week to make sure that you are reminded that this movie is, in fact, coming out, actually. Like, it was selling what I thought was a completely different movie based on having seen it at that point.
So. No, but yeah, to be fair, you know, Lambert's right. The marketing is to get you there opening weekend. Who cares if you like it or not?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, completely beside the point. And I don't fault them for that. I think if you need to trick people into seeing a good movie, go ahead and trick them. You know, if you need to convince people that Leaving Las Vegas was a feel-good, redemptive romance, go for it.
It wasn't.
You only just saw the trailer, didn't you?
I've seen the movie.
Getting into some more of the things that I liked about the film also is just the director's choice to have those it's kind of like a foreground hard focus and soft in the background, so it makes everything – or you makes you focus on one character. I think that one particular – he does it throughout the film, but one particular scene is when Brad Pitt's going to go meet I forget his name in the film, but basically the guy from Argo.
Scoot McNairy's character.
Yeah, Scoot's character in the bar. And there's like this dude yelling in the background. You don't see him. It's just blurry. And then you just hear gunshots, right? But I also liked how the director – when there's a serious conversation going on or there's a point of interest going on with two characters talking, there's no music, no sound effects, no background, anything. It's just those two characters talking. I found that to be very interesting, and it really gives you a sense of, I guess, the gravity of the situation of how these guys operate, because they're not great guys. They do have feelings, yeah, when what's-his-face is getting beat up, Ray Liotta, I mean, there's some feelings between those two guys that have to do it, but it's just, you know, it's a dark, gritty film, but there's some humor in as well.
What I have you guys seen Assassination of Jesse James by that title? The Coward of the
I have not, but I did want to check that out.
Scott?
I missed it over the years. I keep meaning to.
Laramie?
Yeah, I have seen it, and it's a radically different film.
For sure. The main thing I'm referencing in relation to that film, yeah, they are the same director, Andrew Dominik. It's the violence in those two films, I think, is similar in the way it's very to the point. Like, it's very matter-of-fact. With the exception of one, this slow-motion sequence that we've been referring to, the violence of the movie is brutal, but, like, sorry, quick, but it's brutal and kind of, it's done without flash. Someone's getting beat up. They're getting beat up. It hurts. It looks painful. Someone gets shot. They get shot, and then they get shot again to make sure they're dead. Like there's a brutality to it that doesn't play up the idea of being a cool gangster character. It plays up the reality of the situation. And I enjoyed that aspect of the film.
It's very matter of fact as opposed to sensationalized.
Yeah.
And as a result, it's more disturbing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was reminded a lot by, I was going to mention this in the callback, but it's Zodiac, the violence in Zodiac, where it's not really stylized. It's more just like, man, that guy just got killed. And it's not pretty. And there's going to be some stuff on the ceiling and everywhere else. And yeah, it is. The shotgun sequence is fantastic. That was very gripping. And it's not pretty, but it's very effective in what it does.
I think another thing that that's interesting and works about this movie is how it's – I mean, we've seen since – I mean, before this as well, but since, like, Reservoir Dogs and since Tarantino ushered in whatever you would consider he ushered in terms of kind of cool gangster movies, this movie – where people make, you know, pop culture references in their dialogue and talk a certain kind of speak, this movie – it does have, I mean, the political aspect of it. It does, or the referencing the economic crisis. It has that aspect in the dialogue, and so I think the dialogue is still stylized to an extent. But there is kind of the conversations people have with each other in this film. It works against the idea of having, you know, cool hip gangsters talking cool hip language to each other. And that was another thing that I came away thinking that this is a neat angle to take back this kind of movie with.
No, and that was my favorite part of the film, was the quality of the dialogue. Mm-hmm. It felt authentically conversational. And sort of the high watermark that I always hold up with that is City Slickers, for what it's worth. You know, if you ask me what's the best conversational screenplay in my lifetime, I would say City Slickers. The dialogue in this film isn't as good as that, but it brought that to mind. More so than something, you know, when most people think of clever dialogue, think of, you know, Pulp Fiction or, the Usual Suspects or what have you. But the dialogue in this film felt the way that real people really talk. They're not particularly clever. They're not particularly articulate. They don't have, you know, witticisms or, you know, ironic pop culture references on the tip of their tongue. You know, most of the, you know, frankly, most of the characters in this film are not very bright. And that's not always the easiest thing to present authentically because, perhaps stereotypically speaking, most screenwriters are relatively intelligent. At least the ones that get to that, you know, I would say Andrew Dominik is relatively intelligent, I would presume, by the by what I've seen, you know, what I have seen of the assassination of Jesse James and what have you. So, you know, it's not always very easy for smart people to write dumb. And it's not always easy for smart actors to play dumb. I think Jodie Foster is one of the best actresses. Well, I think, you know, Jodie Foster is one of the best actresses on the planet, but she can't play dumb to save her life. Same thing with Kevin Kline. You know, there's a movie called Trade about the human trafficking ring where he plays a somewhat, you know, average intelligence, you know, Texas cop, and he just doesn't pull it off because that's not Kevin Kline.
Yeah. It's a reason I like Killer Joe quite a bit because there's a lot of actors there playing dumb effectively.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean this as a compliment. John Travolta plays dumb very well.
Oh, yeah. Him in Pulp Fiction is Vince Vega.
Yeah.
Like, he plays it.
Big Mac.
Or, you know, something phenomenon. But, you know, again, I felt the dialogue was, again, it's how people talk. And that's not something that you find in that many movies where they sound authentic and they have real conversations that aren't just about explaining the plot.
Yeah. And, and that goes back to your point earlier about the James Gandolfini stuff. I really enjoyed that conversation at the bar as well as the one where they're in the hotel room.
Yeah.
Because it's just, yeah, I don't know. Some people might think that it has relatively very little to do with the movie because he kind of just goes off on this tangent about his own life. And Brad Pitt kind of has to, you know, tell him, dude, you're here for something. I need you to get on your A game. But he's actually just really a depressed guy. And it's just great. You don't really think about it. It doesn't, like what you had said earlier, it doesn't really further the plot. It's not like Danny and Rusty meeting over the plans to steal, to knock over the Bellagio. It's just James Gandolfini saying, dude, don't tell me what to do. I know what I'm doing. Don't you know what, like, I am not even supposed to be here. I'm having a terrible time in my life. Did you sleep with my wife? I was like, whoa, where's all this coming from? It's like, okay, but really, it's what somebody who might be going through a terrible time in their life would think about or talk about. And so it probably did take the writer, I think Andrew Dominik wrote it.
Yeah, he adapted the book.
Yeah, he adapted it from the book. But it takes a very clever mind to write that kind of dialogue. And the other thing I want to bring up is the dark humor stuff. I enjoyed the conversations between Brad Pitt and Richard Jenkins.
You ever killed anyone?
No.
You can get touchy-feely.
Touchy-feely?
Emotional, not fun. A lot of fuss. They cry, they plead, they beg, they piss themselves, they call for their mothers. It gets embarrassing. I like to kill them softly. From a distance. Not close enough for feelings. Don't like feelings. Don't want to think about them. We need Mickey. What's the problem?
Mickey is expensive.
Not at the moment.
You get him for 10?
15. I think in this economy, a quick 15 for 2 days' work would sound pretty good to Mickey. We'll sell him a party. Fly in, whack a guy, fly out. Quick 15. Fly coach.
Especially when Brad Pitt's explaining to Richard Jenkins why they have to
kill a certain person.
And then at the end of their conversation, Richard Jenkins is like, oh, I get it, for street value. And it's like, that's so clever because it's almost like it's like a huge joke on people who are not in the field. They don't know what to do or how things work, and so it's just funny the way that Richard Jenkins expressed it on his face and the way he said it. It's just I enjoyed that a lot.
One thing I you mentioned the scene in the hotel. One thing I liked about this movie, frankly, is that, you know, for better or worse, there are almost no female characters in the film. Now the reason why that's good is because it's basically a male-centric crime drama that does not feel the need to insert a token love interest into the narrative just to have a, you know, an attractive woman to put on the poster.
We don't need a scene of Brad Pitt like waking up with his wife in bed and like, exactly, I gotta go to work or something.
you know, or the girl that's waiting for him that, you know, he's you know, when are you going to give up this life and, you know, run away with me? And, you know, I can't count the number of and, you know, the killer elite is always the example that I use as the worst offender of that, because you have this, you know, hardcore macho crime drama with the Jason Statham, Robert De Niro, and Clive Owen. And we're supposed to, you know, we're supposed to care more about Jason Statham purely because he has a girl waiting home for him. And frankly, I think it's condescending. It's patronizing.
Yeah.
It's insulting to women, frankly.
How was Clive Owen's mustache in that movie?
Awesome.
Terrible.
Was it an A+? Okay.
Oh, yes.
All
right. You know, it's a man at peace with the idea that he will never be Bond. as sad as that is, and I was a fan, you know, I saw Croupier back when it first came out in theaters, so I was on Team Owen for a long time.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Here's a question for everybody, because I can't really think of any, but what were some problems that you had with the film, if any, aside from the subtext?
No, that was my only real qualm. I had issues with the one sequence that we've discussed, just because I thought the way, you know, the stylized nature of it lessened its otherwise, you know, it lessened its dramatic impact. But other than those two things, I mean, I would say within its, what it was trying to do, it was other than those two things, it was a flawless picture.
Did you think that the CG during that time was a little bit over the top, or you kind of just went with it?
I was too distracted by how much I didn't like how it was being shot. Okay. It wouldn't have been any better if the CGI was better, so I didn't really care.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other things. But the text over subtext is a pretty big flaw for me. You know, it's why it's merely very good rather than great.
Yeah. I kind of would. I'm there too. It's good, not great, or very good, not great. Yeah. What'd you get? Or how was? I know that the dude from The Dark Knight Rises, and he was also
Ben Mendelsohn. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you guys like that drug sequence?
So there is one thing, I guess. The music does kind of hit you over the head as well. I mean, and you have,
it's very like classic oldies music.
Yeah, but you have a scene with Ben Mendelsohn, you know, fading in and out while he's doing drugs, while what, Velvet Underground's Heroin's playing, I believe, in the background. it certainly knows what scene. It's not like a flaw necessarily, but it's like, okay, they chose this track because that's exactly the point of the scene. But I can't really say I had any other issues with the film that really took away from my experience of watching it. I was admired too much about things that were going on with it.
Yeah. Cool.
I really like the heist scene in this movie. The heist that occurs early on, and it's because it's like you said, it there's no music, there's nothing going on in the back. It's all focused on these two characters robbing this heist, and, you know, Ray Liotta trying to convince a person to not do this because it's just going to mean for everybody, bad things for everybody's going to happen. And go on, Scott.
No, I agree. It was very realistic and authentic, and because it wasn't hyper-violent and it wasn't, you know, there wasn't a shootout, there wasn't, you know, random gunfire everywhere.
It almost seems like it's playing into the fact that, you know, as a filmgoer who's seen, you know, many kind of gangster movies and heist movies, it's utilizing tension, or it's creating tension based on the fact that you're informed by other movies, so you think something crazy might happen.
Yes, that's a great way of characterizing it.
And so, like, it's almost at another level because of that. Like, it's beyond just the fact that this is the movie it's showing you. It's preying on assumed knowledge that you might be anticipating something because of other movies you've seen that are closely related to it.
And back to that, you know, card game scene, the two characters live separately, and I kind of feared there for a second that something might happen, but yeah, I think that you're right. It assumes that you've seen films where there's ultra violence or something like that, ultra shootouts, and that doesn't happen. So I was tense, but nothing happens, and that was okay with me because I was thinking, good job, Andrew Dominik.
It plays into the idea of, like I said before, that the plot's very straightforward, and it's going in one direction without having crazy twists and turns along the way. And it's just a matter of getting there, and it does it very effectively.
Cool.
Other thoughts before we get to the Laramie? Any other thoughts on Killing Them Softly?
No, I think we just keep saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, then let's get to our rating of the film, then. Each week we try to rate films based on when you should go and see them. And our scale goes from IMAX to theater to Dolby Theater, Netflix, HBO, TV, or just kind of forget about it. I know what most audiences around the country might have thought of that. But, Scott, where would you put it on that scale?
Theater, probably, you know, maybe matinee, because statistically speaking, you're probably not going to like it as much as we did, since America spoke.
They're waiting on our thoughts, yeah.
No, it's a very good movie that I think should be supported. So, yeah, theater.
Laramie?
I would say theater as well, and I would say in particular, if you see a lot of movies, I think you're going to like the beats on this one a lot more. Maybe if you're a casual moviegoer, then wait till, you know, rental, but I would say in the theater is a great place to see it.
I'd say dollar theater, and it's not to say that it's taking away from it, but it's just more of, it's a quieter film, but it's still worth seeing on the big screen just for the cinematic value.
Sure. Yeah, I would say theater as well. I think there's a lot of good things to like about this movie, and I wish it got more attention, even though I assumed that it wouldn't do that well this weekend. I did not assume that, like, an F cinema score was going to be coming its way either. let's get to movie callback.
Callback.
This is where we bring up a couple films that relate in some way to the main feature of the week, and I can start first because who mentioned Donnie Brasco earlier? Scott, did you mention that?
Scott.
Yes.
Yeah, Donnie Brasco was on my list of movie callbacks, actually, because it does play into the kind of lower people on the totem pole when it comes to gangsters dealing with stuff. Also, I actually watched The Friends of Eddie Coyle for the first time, which is based on a book by the same author that wrote Killing Them Softly, and that's where we starring Robert Mitchum and from the 70s. And that's a really good movie, a really good gangster movie that's kind of very similar in tone to this movie. Which is fitting, I guess. In Bruges also came up.
In Bruges.
In terms of kind of the conversations in this movie had reminded me of the conversations going on in Bruges. But, Abe?
I mentioned it earlier, some of the Zodiac just for the violence scenes. And also, yeah, you brought up Killer Joe, and Donnie Brasco is a good pull because when I first saw Donnie Brasco, I thought that Al Pacino was going to be the man, and then you realize that he's kind of just... He's just an average dude.
Laramie?
I would say, weirdly, I think it's a much darker Get Shorty. Get Shorty has those scenes where people explain how things are a lot, and I feel like Killing Them Softly has a couple of those that where they're kind of... They're not overexpository because they're funny and they're great, but it's just like, well, here's the way the real world works, Rube. And Get Shorty has a lot of those as well. So I guess they both have James Gandolfini, now that I think about it.
Boom. Everything's connected.
Everything. Cloud Atlas.
Just Cloud Atlas, that one. Scott?
Yes, obviously Donnie Brasco. Again, you know, just purely in terms of the quality of the dialogue, City Slickers. So if you love City Slickers, you might like Killing Them Softly.
I'm just writing. I'm writing down movies on my list of things that Scott has compared other movies to and how obscure they are. That's ranking pretty high on that scale.
Hey, I wrote a review of Zero Dark Thirty comparing it to Fever Pitch. I win.
Wow.
It's, you know, any number of low-level crime pictures, Donnie Brasco, Friends of Eddie Coyle, you know, Usual Suspects, stuff like that. Plus, again, in terms of the quality of the dialogue, I would say something like City Slickers.
Cool. All right.
Let's move on to box office this week, and we've already kind of had some asides about the box office, but what happened this week at the box office, Scott? You want to?
Well, none of you went to see Killing Them Softly. It did about $7 million opening weekend. It's the lowest opening weekend for Brad Pitt for wide release since he became a movie star. I mean, it was, it's the lowest grossing film since The Favour in 1994. And I guarantee none of the people writing that have heard of knew what The Favour was. They just looked it up on Box Office Mojo like I did. He became a star, a box office draw in 1994 with Interview with the Vampire, which was after The Favour. So for as long as he's been a star, this is his lowest live action debut. Actually, Sinbad opened to $6.5 million back in 2003, I believe.
Animated classic, Sinbad and the Golden Sea, I think.
That's an interesting movie, but that's for another day.
All right.
I actually saw it the first time last year.
Legend of the Seven Seas, that's what it's called. I'm sorry.
ironically, call back to something I mentioned earlier. The entire time I'm watching that movie, I'm thinking, why isn't this Kevin Kline voicing this guy? This absolutely feels like Kevin Kline. But anyway.
It's because he flopped in El Dorado already, so they
exactly.
don't
know. Exactly. He got lost in El Dorado. Anyway. But yeah, it tanked. Got an F from CinemaScore because people were, I guess, expecting the Gangster Squad. I don't know. I didn't realize they were making a sequel to Bugsy Malone. But no, it's I guess it's a tragedy, et cetera, et cetera. I think Weinstein kind of dumped the movie. You know, they got busy work. You know, in September they thought The Master was going to be their great Oscar hope. Now they think it's going to be either The Silver Linings Playbook or Django Unchained. So really, you know, Killing Them Softly has no place at the table. Though I think it's something to be said of how strong of an awards bait lineup the Weinstein Company has this year, that they are in a position to dump something as good as Killing Them Softly. But to their credit, they released it wide. You know, they put it on about, you know, 2,400 screens. So the people that wanted to see it are able to see it. You know, something that might have happened just a couple of years ago is a film like this, even with Brad Pitt, would have just been, you know, death by platform, where it would have been lucky to gross $7 million total. At least now it's got a chance, you know, a slim chance to reach, you know, $20 million bucks. And, you know, it costs only $15 to make. It's already done $15 overseas.
Right.
So in the end, it will make money. You know, it's no one's going to get more work off of it, but it's not going to be a money loser. The collection opened in 1,400 theaters, made about $2 million. Oh well, I mean, they decided to release that wide at the last minute. I don't know anything really about the film other than it's surprisingly decent. Allegedly, I did not see The Collector, though I'm interested in renting it now. But as far as the holdovers. Twilight's at 254. It's going to end up right neck and neck with Eclipse and New Moon, which did $300 million and $296 million respectively. It's already tracking well ahead of Breaking Dawn 1. Skyfall is interesting. Skyfall has $246 million. Not only is it the biggest Bond film of all time by a pretty healthy margin, it's the biggest spy film of all time, and not adjusted for inflation, Skyfall is the biggest grossing, pure non-fantasy, non-sci-fi, non-superhero action picture ever.
All of those things?
Yeah. So, you know, if you're not dealing with, you know, sort of a, you know, a fantasy, superhero, et cetera, film, if you just want, you know, a present, you know, a set on planet Earth with regular people running around with regular guns, it's the biggest grossing action film of all time.
Yeah, it's not doing bad. $870 million worldwide.
Yes, it's $869 million worldwide.
Yeah.
It's going to do a billion, I think. So my prediction a couple months ago that The Dark Knight Rises would be the last 2D film to break $1 billion is incorrect. I'm happily to be wrong about that. For what it's worth, had it been in 3D, it would already be over $1 billion.
Okay.
And other than that, there's not that much to report. I mean, you know, Rise of the Guardians is still a flop. Life of Pi is doing okay. It's done $40 million. It still cost $120 to make. So they're still hoping that Fox can do its overseas magic.
Have you seen Life of Pi yet?
I did. I wasn't crazy about it, but I wasn't, you know, I didn't like it as much as I know you were relatively fond of it, but it wasn't something that inspired me to write an angry editorial or anything like that.
Oh, there you go.
Silver Lining Playbook, I disliked that enough to write about it. I will say
I think you're wrong on that one, but go ahead.
Fair enough.
And I say that objectively.
I understand. Life of Pi, let's put it this way, did not make me believe in God.
But that was a story.
Or was it?
I don't want to deal with the ending, but I know I know where I put my stock. Let's put it that way.
I understand.
All right.
Not much else box office. It's the first weekend in December. And you know what? Next weekend there's not gonna be much to talk about either.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's get we have time, right, Abe?
I think it's time, Aaron, for everyone's favorite long awaited section of games.
Certainly Mike Blakemore's. All of that. All right, this is games, and I made a new game for you guys this week. It is called Killing Them Softly or However. And, okay, so basically I have all of the all of the actors in this film have previously been involved in movies that have also involved people dying in some way, possibly. So I have a series of questions phrased carefully to not give away the answer, but basically one of you will have to guess which film I am referring to. Should be simple enough. Just, you know, shout them out when you know it. So here we go.
Let's do this.
In which film did Brad Pitt kill a Hulk? I thought that'd be easy. In which film did Brad Pitt kill
Troy?
Troy is the answer. Scott Mendelson's on the board.
Yeah. I was going to say Eric Bana, but that's not the movie.
That's the film, Eric Bana.
Yeah.
That's the life story. Okay. In which film was James Gandolfini involved in the death of an Easy Rider?
Oh, True Romance.
True Romance is correct. Laramie's on the board. I'm throwing things at this board that I have to really identify the points. Okay, here we go. In which film did Richard Jenkins reach his own untimely demise following miscommunication with the cranky John Malkovich? Burn After Reading is correct. Scott nailed that one. Okay. Ben Mendelsohn was softly taken out by a scary Bronson in this film.
Dark Knight Rises.
Dark Knight Rises.
Do you feel in charge? Does this give you power over me?
My wife is actually looking forward to seeing it just to listen to his goofy voice.
Wish we could have karaoke with Bane. Scoot McNairy could have had Geely killed if he didn't step up in this film.
Sounds like a lot of references.
Step Up Revolution?
He was in Step Up Revolution?
No.
Oh. That's not, yeah.
I want to say Geely's Jennifer Lopez, so killed? I don't know. Good question.
Scoot McNairy could have had Geely killed if he didn't step up in this film.
Out of Sight. Is he the guy that trips? No. Is it Out of Sight?
I figured this would be the easiest one since you only know Scoot McNairy from one other movie.
Argo?
It's Argo. Scoot could have had Geely killed.
Ben Affleck is Geely.
Yes, Ben Affleck.
Oh, Ben Affleck. Oh, gotcha. All right.
I've never actually seen Geely.
Your Geely knowledge is clearly not up to par.
Yeah.
All right. This one, okay. Which Ray Liotta film found him trying to take the life of a key player in Halloween Resurrection?
Slow Burn. No. Although I think... No, that's the wrong one.
Halloween Resurrection. Who is
you just have to think of the key player in Halloween Resurrection. And
is that the sixth one? The one where they have the reality?
That is the reality one, but that's the eighth. Yes. It's the eighth one.
Oh, eighth.
I think I know the key player, but the film's not coming to me.
If you shout out the key player, maybe others can get the answer.
I'm going to say Buster Rhymes? I don't know.
Perhaps.
I assume Slow Burn is too vague a reference. I give up.
It's Narc. Narc is the film which has Ray Liotta trying
to... Oh!
A Joe Carnahan film. Which is quite good, too, actually.
It's good. I just don't remember everybody who's in it.
All right, last one. Which film has Sam Shepard watching over the deaths of many good men during a trip to Africa?
Black Hawk Down.
Black Hawk Down is the correct answer. Sam Shepard isn't killing them softly, by the way. He was in there
for like 2 seconds, yep. And he's great.
Yeah.
That's a great shot, by the way. It's like one steady camera shot that goes like across the house.
Really? Yeah, yeah.
Brad Pitt has worked with Jim Gandolfini at least 3 times. Because he was in The Mexican, too.
Yep. And True Romance.
Huh. Yeah.
Cool. All right. That was games. That was the game I had. Let's see. What do we have next? Oh, next week. Or actually, no, we got this other thing. Out Now presents What's Out Now. Movies that have come out recently. Beast of the Southern Wild comes out this week, and we talked about that on a past episode.
Everyone is pretty positive on it.
Yeah. Scott, you really like that movie too, I believe.
Oh, yeah. It's going to make... It'll be on my top 10 list.
Laramie, have you seen Beast of the Southern Wild?
Sorry, I wasn't on the mute button quick enough. I haven't seen Beast. I do have a screener, so I know I need to catch up at some point.
Okay. Very interesting in terms of visuals, I say, for sure. And there's... I really like that movie in general, but that's the thing that stands out to me that I like saying to people.
I will be thrilled if she, whose name I don't remember offhand, gets an Oscar nomination.
Quvenzhané Wallace.
Thank you. I wasn't going to try that one.
Yeah. I practiced it. I broke it down phonetically so I could practice it. Dark Knight Rises also comes out this week. I think some people have heard of that movie. And Men in Black 3 also came out this past week. And I think we, at least I know Abe and Scott, we were all surprised by how good that movie was. Like,
yeah.
There was a period where that was my second favorite film this summer after The Avengers during that, you know, June slump. Hmm. And it's still one of, I think it's still one of the best, you know, mainstream pictures of summer 2012. There were a lot of good, you know, sort of but artier films, but in terms of, you know, the big pictures, I think that and The Avengers and, you know, Ted were my favorites. And it's my favorite of the series. I was shocked how much I enjoyed it.
Laramie, did you see Men in Black 3?
I did. I saw it on a plane randomly, and I think it was, yeah, it made me laugh at least a dozen times, which was impressive.
Yeah.
That's the requirement, I think, right, for most comedies. You need at least a dozen chuckles, and it's like, oh, that wasn't it.
Yeah.
Next week, I think we're going to talk about The Collection, mainly because nothing else is really coming out to talk about.
Playing for Keeps, man.
I'm saying Playing for Keeps with Gerard Butler.
But Gerard Butler makes the terrible choice to date Jessica Biel, Uma Thurman, Judy Greer, or Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Or Dennis Quaid in a shocking
twist. Or Dennis Quaid, yes. But we know that he's going to end up with Jessica Biel because she's the only one that's significantly younger than him.
It's almost like Mrs. Doubtfire, but without Mrs. Doubtfire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm getting like random messages from Mark Hoban, friend of the show, about Anna Karenina. Maybe we'll finally go see that and we can talk about that on the show. That might be,
a better choice. I haven't seen that one yet.
I've seen it. It's not good. Enjoy. Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, I've heard as much elsewhere.
I have too. I do like Joe Wright, though.
I do too. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Well, we'll see. And so, because of, you know, not much happening in the relative future in terms of box office, I guess we can try to predict what we think is going to be number one again next weekend. Will it probably be Twilight? Would that be a fair assessment again?
I think Skyfall is falling slower and slower than Twilight. It'll probably creep up there.
Yeah, I hope it's Lincoln. Neck.
You hope it's Lincoln.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
I thought Lincoln was going to be number one this weekend, but it fell a little harder than I was expecting. I mean, he's still doing great, but...
Skyfall, would that be its fifth week out? Would that be some kind of record if it managed to get number one after 5 weeks out?
I think Forrest Gump pulled that off, give or take.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of kind of ones in the 90s that kind of randomly did.
Yeah. I don't know about recently. That's a good question.
Yeah. Or maybe.
It still would be impressive by any rational standard.
If it, yes, only became number one again because Gerard Butler playing soccer didn't cut it. Well, that's going to take us into the end here. For Out Now with Aaron and Abe, you can, of course, find more of my work in my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com, where you can find all my movie reviews, as well as at whysoblue.com for various Blu-ray reviews. Actually, I just posted my Beasts of the Southern Wild Blu-ray review, I think. I think I'm the first one to do that, which is surprising. Everyone was trying to do those Dark Knight Rises reviews in, I guess. But you can also find me at Twitter at twitter.com/AaronsPS3. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com or twitter.com/walrusmoose.
Scott?
Mendelssohn's Memos. Scott Mendelssohn at blogspot.com.
And Laramie?
Brad and Laramie on Movies on iTunes. Also, I think I've got 10 pieces coming for film.com in the month of December, or every once in a while I'm over there on filmdunk.com or ropeofsilicon.com.
All right. And, of course, you can find every other episode of Out Now of Aaron and Abe on iTunes, also at hhwlod.com. That is the podcast network that's happy enough to host our show, along with other shows such as the Walking Dead TV podcast and other fun podcasts about comics and games and cool stuff like that. Outnow.podomatic.com. Most of the newest episodes and some exclusives can be found there. Abe, the Outnow YouTube page.
The YouTube page is up. If you guys just want to listen to just the main reviews, cut out all the trailer talk and games and everything else, head over to youtube.com/outnowpodcast, and it will be up there waiting for you to listen to it.
And you can, of course, email us also at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know if you were one of the 7 people that saw Killing Them Softly this past week and your thoughts on it. Or any other questions you may have, and maybe you have a suggestion for what we should talk about next week. Who knows? Or facebook.com/outnowpodcast and twitter.com/outnow_podcast. Those are the places you can follow and like those pages and, you know, get all the updates and what have you regarding our episodes and shows and whatnot. That's the end of this podcast. Thank you, Laramie and Scott, for joining us today.
Always a
Thank
pleasure.
You.
And, until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
Strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song.
Yo, yeah. This is Wyclef, refugee camp, Criswell, little bass sitting up here on the bass. While I'm on this roast, I got my girl L. One time. Hey yo, L, you know you got the lyrics.
I heard he sang a good song. I heard he had a style. And so I came to see him and